Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
Yeah, welcome back to Going In Raw View. It's been a little while, Larson, since
we've about Going a month. In Raw Views. But now I think the last Sunday of every month.
I think so.
You can expect a new Going In Raw View.
We've decided to do this on a monthly basis, and we've decided, like you said, on the last Sunday of every month.
Which takes planning on our part to do all this stuff, as opposed to just kind of like...
We need a calendar. That's what we need. We need a calendar.
There's one right there.
Yeah.
It's stuck on September. It's not September anymore.
No, it's not. Anyways, this is Going In Raw View. We take a look at old pay-per-views or episodes of... Old wrestling stuff, and we review it here on the show. At the $10 Patreon mark, you can help decide what to review. We put this up. We choose three things to potentially review. We put that to the $10 and up patrons, and we let them decide out of those three which ones we're going to review. This time is a little bit special. Our good friendo Thayer Thabata suggested Armageddon 2006. He was very persistent in requesting this. We put it up to vote against, I thought, two very solid contenders.
Oh, yeah. I was convinced that Halloween Havoc 98 was a shoe-in.
It was close. It was actually close to winning. It was very close to winning. However, in the end, Thayer Thabata put his made his argument better than either of us, apparently.
Apparently.
And it won out. And it's a good thing it did, because I thought this was a really fun, weird, entertaining pay-per-view with lots of weird stuff going on. And a really odd time for the WWE, too. It was sort of post when everybody had, like, you know...
Like 2002 to 2004, everybody was in WWE.
Everybody was there.
And then it was that period where the brand split was still there, but the roster had thinned out a little bit.
Yeah.
This is, you know, when Batista and Orton were on their way up or already at the top of the card.
Right, right, right.
So it was definitely a transitional period. John Cena as well, transitional period.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
From the salad days, mm-hmm, of the Ruthless Aggression era,
mm-hmm,
and the transition to, I guess, what would be the PG era, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I forget exactly when the PG era started. I want to say it was...
Here, keep talking. I'll look.
Yeah. It was kind of weird. Batista was like super over.
2008.
Okay,
so only about a year removed from it.
This was, yeah, you're right.
This was late 2006.
This was the last pay-per-view, 2006. Kind of odd. It was fun nonetheless. They did what they could. This was around the time I started dropping out.
Yeah.
Because I kind of missed, number one, I don't remember ever seeing a match with Jimmy Wang Yang before. I don't remember him at all. I remember not being a fan of MVP solely because his outfit was just too weird. Long sleeves and
like shorts.
A singlet with long sleeves and then sort of shorts.
Yeah.
I didn't like any of that.
I wonder what the inspiration for that was.
Well, you know, he had the football stuff going on too.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, is this some sort of like football wrestler amalgam? I didn't know. And then MVP, and he's like the hot free agent, and they hadn't really used that term that much up until then. And it was some odd booking. I was like, I don't know what this is. I don't know what this means. I don't know what any of this is going on. But there were still vestiges of like the Attitude Era. Like there was that super salacious bikini or lingerie contest that just was completely out of place.
Yeah, it really was.
So we'll start with the beginning, which was, during the opening video package, they referred to this as a show with a triple main event. During the opening video package, they said that. It was MVP versus Kane, Mr. Kennedy versus Undertaker, and then the actual main event, which is a tag match with at least one guy who really was not a main eventer. I know. And they started the show.
I understand logistically, I guess, kind of, that you want to start the show. I mean, you don't want to have the Inferno match. I guess you need to have the Inferno match first because logistically you have to set all that stuff up. I'm sure it takes time.
Yeah.
But why bill it as one of the main events?
I don't know. It wasn't worthy of it. Why was MVP? He was not a main eventer. Kane, I don't really think, was a main eventer at that point. I don't know why they would have done that. In any event, we did get to see a guy get lit on fire.
Yeah.
So, I mean, compared to what was the most recent Inferno match? Was a Bray Wyatt versus
Kane. SummerSlam 2013.
Okay, yeah. And then like
that was awful.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't a lot of what would it be called?
Action.
Emoliation. Immolation.
Yeah, that word.
Immolation.
I said action too, because I remember that being a fairly inert match.
Right.
At least this, there was some drama. There was some creativity.
And in the end, somebody got lit on fire and he ran around a little bit.
But the thing is, with these matches, whoever is wearing the most clothes is one that's going to get lit on fire.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so with Kane coming out with no shirt on,
because
I think the first Inferno match with Kane and Undertaker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And back then, Kane had the one arm fully covered.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, okay, he's got one full sleeve. Undertaker has no sleeves.
Yeah.
Kane's getting lit on fire.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no win or loss face in Inferno matches. Right. Whoever's wearing the most clothes is going to get set on fire.
That's your win or loss face.
And when MVP came out, I thought I saw like some bandages around one of his arms.
Mm.
And so that's what I thought was going to get caught on fire. I'm pretty sure MVP was going to come out and lose an end.
Evidently. Well, you were right in one respect. I thought this was kind of interesting because this was MVP's first big feud.
Mm-hmm.
This was the blow-off, I believe, for that first big feud.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost. He was the guy who got set on fire. They brought him in with much fanfare. I mentioned earlier, you know, they did Teddy Long was negotiating with the next hot free agent, even though I don't think anybody had ever heard of him. That's always kind of silly. It's one thing. It's like, oh, they're bringing AJ Styles in. Everybody kind of knows he's a hot free agent. Bobby Roode, hot free agent. Everybody knows him.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody really knew who MVP was. So to refer to him as a hot free agent, nobody knows who you are. Are you really a free agent? Are you really a hot free agent? In any event, he had picked up a couple of wins against Kane.
Yeah, the basic story template for this feud seems similar to the one between Undertaker and Mr. Kennedy as well. Because Kennedy, this is before the whole Money in the Bank debacle with him.
Right.
So this is when he was on his way up. And it's kind of the same thing. He had already picked up a couple of wins over the Undertaker.
Yeah.
And yet, in what seemed like the blow-off, took the loss.
Yeah. So I just wasn't sure this is a terribly great way to get MVP over. You know, like what's really the upside of this? Don't you want to establish like a decent win streak first?
You think so?
That's sort of the way they do things now.
Yeah.
But in any event, you had a Inferno match against Kane. I mean, they do what they can while the ring is surrounded by flames.
You know, granted, I haven't seen all the Inferno matches, but as far as Inferno matches go, I dare say this is one of the better ones.
Yep, I'm with you. I haven't really seen a lot
of them. Because there is a couple of creative spots.
Yeah.
That spot early on where Kane takes the cover off the turnbuckle and sets it on fire.
Yeah.
And tries to light MVP on fire with that.
Right.
Creativity. My only problem with it is MVP kicks Kane.
Mm-hmm.
He has the opportunity to grab that flaming turnbuckle himself and light Kane on fire, yet he doesn't do that. He kicks it out of the ring.
I almost feel like MVP, part of his thing was he just didn't seem very prepared for it. He was overwhelmed.
Well, he seemed scared.
Yeah, he was overwhelmed by fear to really prepare for, you know, the details of an Inferno match.
Yeah, he just wanted to get out of there.
You got to think about these things when, you know, somebody, hey, we're booking you for an Inferno match. Okay, well, I'm freaked out. Got to think about this. What can I do to get the advantage, you know? And I feel like he just was scared the entire
time. Because at one point, early on, he scaled the turnbuckle and was prepared to jump out,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't.
Yeah.
That would come into play later on, though. There's this cool spot where Kane was down on the mat and MVP was doing these basement drop kicks to him.
Yeah.
And every one, he was pushing Kane closer and closer to the flames.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one, Kane got out of the way and MVP was like,
yeah,
that close to the fire.
There's a couple of close calls here.
Yeah. So that was a cool spot. Again, MVP goes to the top rope. Is like hesitating about whether to jump out, and Kane says, "You're not hesitating anymore," and just pushes him out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kane does his top rope clothesline.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So they brawl on the outside for a while.
Right.
In the end, though, Kane just grabs MVP by the throat, pushes him into the fire,
dips him into the fire,
and then MVP's rear end,
his butt, his caboose.
Yeah,
it was on fire,
up in flames.
His butthole was in flames,
and so he runs around the ring a little bit. And I'm like, why are there no fire extinguishers? Well, he knew where he had to run.
Exactly.
That part of the match they had planned out because he ran around opposite of the hard A-cam of the ring and then right at the foot of the ramp collapses right where two fire extinguishers are.
Well, that's, you know, you don't want to get the mats on fire.
Yeah.
Or you don't want to go to those burned.
You need them later on.
You need the steel ramp there because it's not going to get burned, you know.
But I'm surprised they didn't have someone, you know, like right behind the timekeeper with the fire extinguisher.
What do you think? I mean, I'm sure
they want the visual.
I'm sure they had some sort of, like you said earlier, bandages of some sort, but on his caboose, maybe soaked in some sort of fire retardant.
Yeah, I would think so.
I would guess.
I would assume that'd be some sort of protection there.
But hey, kudos to MVP for being lit on fire. I know. Because that's not. Ooh.
You'd think there would be several ways where that could go wrong really quickly.
I know, really exactly. Easily. That's got to be terrible.
So.
Yeah, so
he's a braver man than I.
Storyline, he was out for a little while with third-degree burns.
Yeah, they said during the show that he was sent to a burn unit.
To his caboose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, next up we had some divas backstage with Teddy Long, and they seemed overjoyed at the fact that they had to participate in a lingerie contest. This was in the doldrums of the... I mean, I don't know what else was happening in the women's division at the time, but this was not a good thing.
Not a high point.
You had Ashley Massaro.
Yeah.
Layla was there.
Yeah. You had Jillian Hall.
Yeah.
And Crystal.
I don't really remember who Crystal was.
They were the participants in this particular nice lingerie contest. But anyways, Teddy Long announces it in a backstage segment.
At this point, so during the Attitude Era, the salaciousness kind of fit with the rest of the show. It all felt like one long salacious thing. This episode, like at this point, it kind of just stuck out like a sore thumb. It felt out of place almost, because it's not like you had Austin running rampant, dropping curse words, throwing up the middle finger, or Vince McMahon getting busted open and blood everywhere. I mean, granted, you had
plenty of blood during this particular point in time in WWE, but it was like the vestiges of the Attitude Era, sans the stars that made the Attitude Era what it was. There was no Stone Cold. There was no Rock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was no HBK until a little bit later.
And then, but even around this era, there was...
I guess HBK was around during this era, sorry.
Yeah, no, there was a focus on wrestling at this time. HBK versus Angle was only a year before this, and that was a wrestling thing. We had Chris Benoit, Chavo, I mean, Eddie had only died a year earlier. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Gregory Helms, he was doing some good work. It felt so out of place.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get to it when we get to the actual thing. But
let's talk about this ladder match a bit, because especially Brian Kendrick and Paul London,
mm-hmm.
there were several times during this match where I was asking, why did they just do that?
I know.
Like, why did you take that bump? That seemed unnecessary. I mean, of course, this match is well known for the injury that Joey Mercury suffered during the course of the match. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Going back to what I was saying a moment ago, it almost felt like the WWE at the time was going through a very uncertain time in terms of what they were.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, if you even look at the two world champions, you had John Cena, who obviously then went on to become the face of the company, and that's the direction they were going with. And then you had Batista, who was very much kind of a product of the past with the big, burly, you know, strong guys. And so even with this, like, look at the lineup here. You had Dave Taylor and William Regal.
You wouldn't expect them to be in a ladder match.
No, not at all.
In the Hardys, you very much expect them to be in a ladder match. You have Eminem, who
very
fit.
Very athletic. They kind of fit. But
as do Kendrick and Paul London.
Kendrick and Paul London, they could have thrived 5 years earlier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Eminem Eminem, they were very athletic, but you don't really think of them as high spot guys necessarily.
Well, no, I would for John Morrison.
John Morrison, but I don't
remember. Because he was a high flyer.
But I never really pictured him as like an extreme guy. He would do cool athletic stuff. He was more in the mold of like a Kofi Kingston. You think of him like a high flyer?
Okay, yeah, yeah. No,
but like
that.
Not reckless. I'll put it this way, not reckless. Like the Hardys and like Edge and Christian were like, they were reckless, you know, for our entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
Never really got that.
No, I understand that.
You know
what
I mean?
Yes.
But guys like Kendrick and Paul London seem completely suited for the TLC matches in 2000 and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Dave Taylor and William, that was just bizarre. That was just weird.
Yeah, the story with them is that, at least with William Regal, he was afraid of heights. So he didn't want to ever climb the ladder.
And Dave Taylor was in his like early 60s.
Yeah, initially the match was supposed to be between Kendrick and London.
The
and,
champs.
Yeah. And Dave Taylor and William Regal. This is a fairly decent time into Kendrick and London's, record-setting tag title reign, I believe.
Yeah, and they were as we saw with Helms, they were trying to establish stars, I think, out of lengthy reigns, because he was like the longest reigning cruiserweight, or I think he was the longest reigning champion
on the roster.
And
then JBL said that Helms held the cruiserweight title longer than he held the world title on SmackDown,
which was like, I mean, almost a year.
But anyways, initially supposed to be Kendrick and London versus Dave Taylor and William Regal.
Mm-hmm.
Theodore Long comes out before the match and again says, you know, I'm in the Christmas spirit and the holiday spirit.
Yeah.
So for your entertainment, we're going to make this a ladder match.
Right.
And we're also going to add two more teams, which end up being...
Which is like terrible general managing. That's awful. Like, especially for, look, Kendrick and Paul London, they're young dudes. They can adapt. But like... Dave Taylor and William Regal probably prepared for this.
I know.
You know? Like, okay, we've got these young chaps. Now we're going to have to face them. They're very quick. They're very athletic.
We can use our experience and our...
Brawling.
And our brawn.
Exactly.
To best them, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden, Teddy Long comes in. Hey, playa. Now it's a tag title. Now it's four-way. And it's a ladder match. Well, blimey. I don't like heights.
Yeah.
I don't like heights.
Yeah.
So that's weird.
And the Hardys were still incredibly over back then. As soon as Eminem came out, the whole crowd was chanting Hardys. I think Jeff was Intercontinental Champion. I think that was the belt he was wearing when he came out.
Oh, okay. All right.
So there was a lot of spots, a lot of bumps that I didn't really want to see people take.
Yeah. It was just a
throughout
lot.
This match.
So, like, going back to the Attitude Era, the initial TLC matches, they were very graceful.
Yeah.
You know, they would execute spots that just seemed very graceful.
Well, there was always build-up to spots, too.
Yeah.
And this just seemed like spot.
And it was a lot of it was like awkward, like, oh, that had to hurt
it's like
in
they,
a weird way.
It's like they had a spot-per-minute quota they had to fill. And it felt like everybody was rushing through spots.
Yeah. And they were just like, it was like there was no grace to it.
No.
It would just, they would just fall weird.
Yeah.
And they would fall like awkwardly, like, and their leg would get caught in one of the ladder rungs, and they'd be just like all weird like that, or they'd fall awkwardly
like,
on the
like
ropes
they were,
and they
like
spill
glitching,
out.
Yes.
It was all glitches. It was just a glitch match.
And I don't know if that's necessarily why Joey Mercury got hurt. It's either it was a lack of communication.
That was...
But we'll set it up here. So it's John Morrison.
What happened there was...
Failure to communicate.
Yeah.
Was
it was a turn of events.
Turn of events. John Morrison set up a ladder open on its side, so the open end, the larger end, was facing the turnbuckle.
Yeah.
On top of that, he put a ladder that was folded up with the top facing the turnbuckle, like a lever.
Mm-hmm.
So the spot initially, I believe, was either Morrison or Mercury was going to try to suplex Jeff Hardy onto the ladders.
Yeah.
Jeff Hardy reverses. Matt Hardy comes, helps. He holds Mercury and Morrison, and then Jeff...
Holds their heads down like this.
Yeah, and Jeff Hardy jumps and does kind of like a senton onto the ladder.
To seesaw it up.
Sending the lever upwards.
Yeah. Now, I'm thinking if you're... Because I didn't look. Did you see what John Morrison did?
He turned his head.
He turned his head. So I'm thinking you either want to do something like this.
You want to put your hands up, ideally, but nothing else. You want to turn your head so you're at least taking the brunt.
Right, you don't try to eat the ladder, basically.
Well, I don't know if Mercury knew it was coming. Like, he knew the spot was coming, but I don't know if he knew if, I mean, I have to read more about it, if Hardy was jumping off that particular moment. I don't know if there was some spot they were supposed to call.
I mean, because the ladder came quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the blood came in just about as fast.
There was a lot of blood.
Pretty much instantly.
Immediately. And they had no problems replaying that. So, like, he gets hit in the, was it the?
It's around right here.
The orbital socket.
Yeah,
that's right.
Broke his orbital bone.
So he recoils. The camera goes to him, and it's just...
Yeah, he pretty much immediately rolls out of the ring, and he looks up. You know, the camera's right there, and he's already pouring blood. There's already a pool of blood in the ring. There's a pool of blood forming on the ring mat.
Ugh.
So they go back to the action, replay it a couple times. They cut back to him. His eyes are already swelling up.
Yeah.
And this blood is coming out everywhere. So they take him back, and they say he's rushed to a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Rightfully so.
Probably not just a fictional burn unit.
No, that's a legit.
He's going to a hospital.
He got his face busted up.
Because, like, they cut back to him, too, and his eyes all closed. Oh.
Yeah, it's really swelling up already. So that more or less took Eminem out of contention for the match.
Were going to win. And they kept on selling the fact that, oh, Morrison's doing such a good job without his partner. Yeah.
Well, there's a stretch of the match he wasn't even involved. There was this one spot where Regal delivers this brutal half and half suplex to London. I think that was when like one of his limbs got caught in the rungs of the ladder. I was like, why are you doing that?
God.
And then when Kendrick did the sliced bread off the ladder onto Regal, it looked like he landed right in his head.
I know. And it looked like Regal wasn't really ready to go. Like when that happened.
Or
he was just like, because wasn't it? It was from the apron to the ground, wasn't
it? No, it was from the off the ladder.
They're on the ladder and he did that. And Regal was like, dude, I'm not going to be doing that. Like, it just looked like he didn't want to be doing
that. And then also, I don't think there's enough room for both of them to land without someone hitting the ropes.
Yeah.
So Kendrick kind of had to land like that.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, if palm my hand is his head.
Oh dear, this is not good.
It was.
I'm not happy with this.
You
match.
Could hear the crowd gasp when that happened. So they were like, "Oh well."
Okay, I'm not happy with Teddy Long.
Saw someone break their neck today.
Why am I still doing this?
In the end, Paul London punches Matt Hardy off a ladder.
I love
and gets the belt.
Ladder matches are always the worst, dude. Because like the very end,
the payoff is kind of underwhelming.
The payoff is always underwhelming, and simply because every time there's a false grab at the titles, they're so bad at faking it. They're like doing this, like they're like a cat just batting at a toy.
Yeah.
Whereas as soon as the guy is winning that he's supposed to win,
yep, cool, calm, yeah, exactly. And collected. Yeah,
they just pull it down like no problem. Anyways, but I mean, it was like there was a lot of
insane spots.
There was a lot of insane spots. It was an entertaining. It was just hard to watch. Next up, the Miz came out, Baby Miz.
Yeah,
this is pretty fresh off his
debut. His run on Tough Enough.
Yeah.
And this must have been when he had heat in the locker room because JBL could not stand
him. Ran him down
from the moment he walked down to the ring to the moment he left.
And Miz was doing, like, I guess he was so fresh that he was still referencing the real world.
Yeah.
Because he was like, this is the real story true story of blah, blah, blah. And then he would end with hoorah. Surprisingly,
the crowd got into it.
He was able to convince the crowd to start chanting hoorah with him, which I think is like a Marine thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure why he was doing that. But yeah,
it's foreshadowing because in about 10 years in the future,
he would be the Marine.
He would be the Marine.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, he was terrible. It is actually remarkable that he never lost his job. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a credit, because he was so unconvincing in trying to convince people that he had any charisma, because man, he was like his face. He would do his face in weird. And I liken it to, it wasn't that long after, what was it, 2009 that him and Cena fought at Mania? Or was it
2011.
Okay.
Because after this, he had his run with
So it was like 5 years. John Morrison. Yeah, it was like 5 years later. His run with John Morrison was fun. It was fun. But he was still trying to convince people that he was main event material when he had his run with Cena. Now, I totally believe it. He's been there long enough.
Yep.
He toughed it out. He did his job, and he's fantastic now. I love him to death. But back then, man, it was like, how is this kid going to last? But, man, like a cockroach, he stuck around.
Yeah.
Because he was, it was not good. I mean, he gave it his all.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't stutter. It wasn't like, who's the other kid? Daniel Pooter.
Oh, yeah. His promo was like, terrible.
Yeah, who was just, man.
Well, yeah.
He had enthusiasm.
Yeah, he had enthusiasm. He didn't stumble. He might have been trying to convince himself while he was trying to convince the audience.
Yeah.
But he was at least somewhat convincing.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell there was passion there.
Yeah, true.
And you could see the seeds of what the Miz would eventually become.
Right.
Just wasn't fully formed yet.
Yeah.
He faced the Boogeyman.
One of the most fully formed characters of that era, at least. Because, man, that dude really committed, didn't he? Eating worms and whatnot.
Yeah.
He had a great, great look.
Oh, yeah.
I have never looked into the story of why.
Some outlet recently had a retrospective on him that I read. That he got started really late wrestling.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And I could be completely off base. But it was more his character work that got him to where he ended up being as opposed to his in-ring work, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you got to figure that sort of ceiling is probably a tad limited, you know? It's like he's supernatural, but you're not going to take him in the same way as you take, like, The Undertaker, you know? Or even Bray Wyatt, for that matter. When you don't have, like, and granted, I know Undertaker doesn't have a name, but, like, I don't know. When you're literally the Boogeyman, which is like a kid's nightmare type thing, and you eat worms, there's not going to be a whole lot of ceiling there. But then if you're like you're saying, if you got started late, who knows? I mean, I'm sure there's a story out there. And right after we get done filming, I'll probably look it up and I'll find out.
Yeah.
But anyways, The Miz apparently up to this point was undefeated. I'm not sure how legit any of those victories were, but this was his first loss.
Yep.
Miz took a loss against the Boogeyman. Pretty quick match, if I'm not mistaken. The Miz. Yeah, this is less than 3 minutes. This is the shortest, easily the shortest match.
Yeah, going back to the Boogeyman, looks like he got started when he was about 30.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, wait, no. Sorry, no, 40 when he got started.
There's still time for me. Wow.
So this is from Wikipedia, and this is all starting to come back to me now, kind of. Okay. So he's on the early seasons of Tough Enough, I guess, or tried out for it.
That's interesting.
And after surviving the first day of eliminations, previously he had said he was 30, but after the first day of eliminations, he admitted that he was actually 40 years old.
That's great.
No, so he got started really late.
I'm actually 40. I'm the whole 10 years older than I said I was.
That's crazy. So he was 42.
It was like that dude who was trying to play high school basketball, and it turns out he was like 30.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Good for him. Hey, man. Fake it till you make it. He's still doing stuff.
I know.
You know, he's still around.
So, anyways, Boogeyman won with
a bunch of worms and misses.
Like a choke slam powerbomb amalgam type thing. And yeah, that towards he does like a Sam Raimi movie spot. Blah. And vomits worms
so
into
gross.
The Miz's mouth.
Hey, again, commitment. You know, you have to appreciate that.
Oh,
that's
I know.
Gross.
And it was interesting that he just dug into his pant pocket and grabbed a huge handful of worms out.
I like
that.
That
was really. Yeah. Did you notice this? That, he comes out and he has worms in his mouth.
Yeah.
And then for the first, I don't know, 2/3 of the match, he just had the worms in his mouth. And at one point, I don't know, maybe he took a bump or something, and they just all came out, and they're all strewn across the ring.
How do you keep them in your... They're worms. How do you keep those in your mouth for 2 minutes of a match?
I don't know.
Maybe a minute and a half. It was only a 3-minute match. I don't know.
So after the first... After the first three matches, the ring was covered in blood.
Yeah.
And worms.
Because we forgot to mention, like, during the ladder match, there was a spot that happened a couple minutes after Mercury had his spill. And I think it was Morrison falling down on that spot, and it was literally like a lake of blood.
Yeah,
it was
gross.
So much of Joey Mercury. That
and they did do a very good job cleaning it up, because later on the show, there was like caked blood on the ring mats.
Yeah, it was pretty gnarly. Next up, you just don't expect somebody to drop a freaking pint of blood.
Yeah.
Chavo Guerrero had an interview. They're doing this thing where Chavo, and I'm not even really sure who was the, I guess Vicky was the heel here, but then Benoit was kind of like... I didn't really get... I was kind of like... I think when this match happened, I started looking up Eddie because I was like, man, how long was this after? And it was about a year and a half after Eddie died. So they were able to get Vicky into like heel territory mm-hmm. already, mm-hmm. which I love Vicky Guerrero. I think she's great. And I always thought it was awesome that they transitioned her into a role on screen so that she could still support her family and get over. And it just happened that was a heel,
yeah.
you know, a heel run. So I thought it was cool and everything. So Chavo gave an interview about, I forget exactly what the crux of this
was. Oh, is it Survivor Series? There was a spot where Benoit was putting Chavo in a sharpshooter. Mm-hmm. Chavo reversed it, sent Benoit back to the ropes, and Vicky was on the apron. And so when Benoit hit the ropes, he pushed
Vicky
off the apron onto the ring mats on
there.
The outside.
I did notice this about the Boogeyman. I forgot in my notes. He had a LeVar Ball run. When he ran up the ramp and he started doing the wide leg LeVar Ball run. I was cracking up. It was like dead on too. That led to Chavo versus Chris Benoit. Some of the it's so bad, but like JBL in the lead up to this, he was talking about Benoit. He's like, I never knew Benoit was capable of such terrible things. And I was like, ooh,
yeah,
little
I
you know
that
JBL.
Too.
It's a lot worse than that. Anyways, I mean, fantastic match, though.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
fine.
Benoit versus Chavo Guerrero, man. Two great wrestlers.
Yeah. The finish was Benoit putting Chavo in a sharpshooter.
Mm-hmm.
Vicky enters the ring with the U.S. title because Benoit was U.S. champion at the time.
Right.
He yells at Vicky, don't do it.
Yeah.
Releases the hold.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, I didn't note how he got the belt out of Vicky's hands. Vicky is on the ground, and he's contemplating whether to put her in the sharpshooter.
Oh, yeah, man.
While he does that, Chavo rolls him up from behind. Benoit reverses that into a sharpshooter, and mm-hmm. Chavo taps.
Nice.
But it was a fine match, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a good match. They're two good wrestlers. Next up, I thought was a really good match
also.
It was. Gregory Helms. I don't know when he stopped being the Hurricane.
Yeah, I don't either.
I felt like he was a bit... I mean, he's always a really good wrestler. I wonder if there was a way they could have channeled that charisma he brought to the Hurricane character. Because at this point... Honestly, it felt like... This should have been him before he was Hurricane.
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean?
This is the heel run that gets him over so he can have a long, sustained face run.
Because there was none of that. It was all just him trying to be serious wrestler guy. And I feel like that was not the right way to go with him, man. Like, he was freaking... He was the man as the Hurricane.
Yeah, he was.
He was so much fun. Anyways, he took on Jimmy Wang Yang. who was one of the Young Dragons back in WCW. The dude had plenty of charisma.
Oh, yeah. He was good in the ring.
He was good in the ring. He had plenty of charisma. I'm not sure. Not looking him up. Don't know why I'm pretty sure he was one of the names WWE wanted to bring back.
That sounds right.
For the brand split this last time around. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, I know he's still doing stuff.
Rumors or reports to that extent.
But no, he was cool.
Wow, he's only 36.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude's young, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So anyways, you haven't noted here, Helms with the top rope swinging neck breaker. Yeah, there was all cool. sorts of great wrestling here. It was just a lot of really good wrestling.
Yeah.
And it was going inside and outside of the ring, lots of great high-flying moves. Helms won with a single-legged coat breaker.
I don't know what the official name is, but that's pretty much what it was.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you only hit him with one knee instead of two.
I always know when whenever I'm into a match, I have no notes on it.
Yeah, I know.
You know? Because like I'm like, oh, man, this is actually kind of a cool match. But then I have like a ton on Mr. Kennedy. So
that match took a little while to get going.
Yeah, it did. There was like a really long. They tried to make the drama of Mr. Kennedy versus Undertaker like into dramatic.
I thought the package they played before the match was really good.
Yeah, it was good.
That bit where blood was raining down on Mr. Kennedy from an episode of SmackDown. That was a cool image,
dude. My thing was this. What was really his gimmick? Like, I get that if they're just trying to get, like, this sort of, I don't know.
Arrogant heel.
Guy. But, like, I don't know. He talks on the mic, and he's just got the most. And I get he's a heel. You're not supposed to like him. With Randy Orton back then was the perfect heel that you just looked at his face, and you hated him because he was so villainous, you know?
Yeah.
You knew that guy, there is something wrong up here. And he was just a straight, because he exudes that perfectly. Mr. Kennedy just had like, go away.
Yeah.
You know, it was like
more of annoying smugness as opposed to menacing smugness. Because
his face was kind of fat. He had like a small mouth. and I hated that like his main thing. Number one. So when he got booted from the WWE, went to TNA, he dropped a promo where he impersonated Triple H telling him to stop chewing gum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why anybody would have a problem with Triple H telling him to stop chewing gum, because it bothered the crap out of me when he was doing his promo and he was like, hell, I am SmackDown. I was like, would you stop chewing that gum? You look stupid. You look so ridiculous. I hate that right now.
Interesting.
And it wasn't like, oh, he's such a bad heel. You want your heels to be like true villains, yeah. You know, not just an obnoxious guy who chews gum when he shouldn't.
Yeah.
It just comes off as kind of unprofessional and arrogant when there's nothing to be arrogant about.
Yeah.
That's one of my main things. When you're arrogant, you have nothing to be arrogant about.
Yeah, fair point.
Randy Orton would go around kicking people in the head. He'd like destroy old people, like legends.
Yeah.
Like
that was his gimmick, yeah.
That's villainous right
it
there.
It is. Chewing. He kicked Mick Foley down some stairs.
Oh, my God. That was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you're just a dude who says your name twice. You like, they bring down a boxing microphone thing.
I mean,
you know?
That's cool. The microphone thing was cool.
Did you like saying his name twice?
Cool. No, I didn't say his name once.
I didn't get... No, he did that.
Remember? No, I know. Yeah.
He'd say, Mr. Kennedy!
And then he'd just say Kennedy again.
Kennedy!
Yeah, that was... whatever he said, I didn't care about. But the visual of the mic coming down from the ceiling and the spotlights is very dramatic. I like all that.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right.
But I could not really... I don't really care about what he said.
What about the bubble gum? What about the gum?
Serious? You know me. One of my pet peeves is hearing people chew.
Right.
I can't stand it.
You're a promo guy. Like, your main gimmick, from what I can tell...
Yeah, is
from
your
what
promo
I can tell
ability,
is
yes.
They literally lower a special microphone down there for you.
Yeah.
And you're chewing gum.
I will say this. And this is something Dave Grohl said, because he chews gum all the time.
Yeah.
Especially when he's performing. And he says he does that so he has moisture in his mouth, because he sings, and, you know, so... His mouth and throat doesn't get dry, which would affect his ability to sing.
Sure enough.
That's the only rationale I can think of why he might be out there chewing gum. But considering he's not performing a two-hour set.
Right, yeah.
Just go get a nice swig of water, have some tea.
Yeah.
You know, get that throat lubricated.
It's maybe a five-minute promo.
Yeah.
You don't need all that.
Probably don't need to chew the gum the whole time. Or chew your gum. Do what Mr. Perfect did. On your way out.
There you go. You're done. I didn't get it all. He was a walking tribal tattoo, dude. He had that freaking tribal
giant one on his back. I
know. Oh my God, it was so bad. I don't know. I never saw the appeal of the guy. I never did. I think that was, again, one of, like, I one of the reasons. I think Miz was one reason. Mr. Kennedy, MVP. They're all kind of reasons why I didn't watch. I was like, who? These guys aren't even like. There's nothing appealing about these guys. Like, I didn't see anything. They weren't special wrestlers. Like, MVP was a decent wrestler. They weren't special wrestlers. There was nothing about their character that I loved or hated. So it was just like, you're just trotting out these guys. Amazing!
Well, especially Mr. Kennedy and The Miz. They just seem, you know, like they could be Affliction models, you know?
I know, exactly. They were just there. I'm like, give me, like, real characters. Yeah. Give me guys with, like...
Affliction models.
No, it was a good one.
Anyway, so
match was fun though.
Match was fine. It took a while to get going. There was some brawling all over the place. But then once they got to the set, it was fine.
It was a last ride match,
which means you had to toss someone in the back of a hearse and drive the hearse out of the arena
somewhere. Like out of like at
no, I think it's literally out of the interior of the arena. Because as soon as the Undertaker, spoiler alert, he won, drove it through the curtains by the ramp, ref. Bring them
down. Oh, okay, okay.
So you have to drive through those curtains. So it's maybe a matter of 25 feet.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So pretty much once you get in the car, if you start it and let it idle for 15 seconds, you win.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it seemed to be. Yeah. So it was a lot of brawling. They eventually made their way to the set.
The set was very elaborate. It was like a big castle.
Yeah, more or less. They climbed up. There was a little area that was set aside for them to actually fight on. So they brawled on the set. You knew someone was going off, and it was Undertaker. Kennedy threw him off, and they tried their best to disguise the 18 inches of padding that was there, the area where the Undertaker landed, and there was one clear shot of it, but thankfully they had like little miniature castle set around that, so for the most part, you didn't get a good sustained look. There was maybe one, 2 or 3 second shot.
Yeah,
there was a huge hunk of padding there for the Undertaker to fall on. After that, Kennedy puts Undertaker in the back of the hearse. And they had like an early GoPro in the inside of the car.
Yeah.
Probably a lipstick camera.
Yeah.
So Kennedy's in there trying to, you know, get in the car ready to go. Looks in the rearview mirror. Looks back ahead of him. Undertaker does his sit-up thing.
Little did they know that this would be like a highly gifable moment, you know, 10 years later. I mean, I haven't really seen it, but it totally was.
Oh,
like,
I know.
That
I know.
Shot was so ridiculous and funny. I'm like, man, why isn't somebody like really gift that? Because
I know. And then Mr. Kennedy overacts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then Undertaker grabs him, pulls him out back to the back of the car.
It was a cool visual.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Here's the thing. Like, this match was so goofy and so overbooked. That it was very entertaining, regardless of who was in it, you know?
Yeah. And so Undertaker starts busting out weapons, a chair, grabs a lead pipe, tries to hit Kennedy with it, just busts the back of the car.
Right.
Eventually gives Kennedy an unprotected chair shot to the head.
Yeah,
which busts Kennedy open.
I mean, that's the cool thing about his hair being that
it's the
blonde.
Ric Flair thing, yeah.
It's the Ric Flair thing, yeah.
So when he bleeds, it really stands out.
Mm-hmm.
Undertaker puts him on the top of the car. We get a choke slam. In a tombstone, throws Kennedy in the back, drives 25 feet, wins the match.
Bang. Done.
You know, in the Attitude Era, they would have cut back to that, and he would have driven that hearse off a bridge.
Oh, yeah, I know, exactly, yeah.
Something like that.
They'd have gone outside, Undertaker, rest in peace, and then the camera would
he would have driven it somewhere, wanted stock footage of a car going off the cliff.
Exactly, yeah. Or, like, he would drive it somewhere, it would stop, and then it would be a side shot, and
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
After that was Naughty or Nice lingerie contest.
Yeah. The thing that I think... So, okay, you know, a bunch of attractive females in skimpy clothes dancing around. Who doesn't like that, right? I think my main problem with it was right before Santa Claus came out to introduce... Okay, there was two things I liked about it. There was one thing that bugged me about it. There was one thing I liked about it. Right before Santa Claus came out, or right as he was coming out, they cut to a shot in the crowd of a girl who was maybe like 10 years old. At that point, I was like, oh, why would you bring your... Like, she has to see this now? There aren't any women fighting on the card. It's just a lingerie contest where one of them, and it was Layla, was dancing around like she was an actual stripper. Not just like a movie stripper, but she was... I was like, oh, that looks real.
I'm pretty sure the top of her butt crack was exposed at least a couple times.
Yeah, yeah. It was very, very skimpy. It was very salacious. So that, I mean, that, you know, seeing a kid in the audience, like a little girl in the audience, that just immediately, it's like, you know, any you know, pleasure I might be getting from this has just been completely ruined because somebody brought their kid and now she has to watch this. That's gross. It was saved for me, however, once Santa Claus stripped down and it was just a fat man in a little thong dancing around. I thought that was hilarious. He said nobody won. He just said, we all win. And then he stripped and he started dancing around with his big old boobies and his big booty where you could see everything. I was cracking up. At that point, I thought it was, okay, that's pretty funny. Fat man in a thong is hilarious. I'm sorry, it is. And they all do a conga line out. And so, okay, well, you know, segment saved. But still, yeah, it's a little awkward, you know. There's a time and place for that kind of activity. In the middle of a wrestling match, probably, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyways, then we had our main event. King Booker. Man, this is another thing. So,
oh, you forgot. There was a Booker T. Finley
segment. Backstage moment. That's right, yeah.
Backstage where they were there was some tension about whether they could trust each other. And then Charmel says, no, we're going to get through this.
Right.
And yet there was still tension because Finley said something on the way out.
Yeah.
That upset them.
And I'm just thinking to myself, look, Finley, Booker T is a legit main eventer.
Oh, yeah.
World champ.
Yes.
You're not. You never have been. So you probably need to pay attention to what Booker is doing.
Yeah.
And not worry, and, you know, worry about that. Because it was kind of obvious. Like, Booker T looks great.
Oh, yeah.
Batista, obviously. Cena, they all look great. Finley's this little, like, you know, sort of chubby old man. You know, and I love that. I love Finley, Dave Taylor. I love that.
Yeah.
Old bastards.
Yeah. Real tough men.
Real tough men. But you know, it just didn't translate well. None of them were really like a legit main event, to be honest with you. Like a tag match, that's not a legit main event.
No.
Give me a break. King Booker came out with Charmel. I love Charmel.
Yeah, she's
just
great.
Buckets and buckets of charisma. She comes out and she's doing the all hail King Booker thing. With her like terrible British accent, and she goes up to a little fat dude in the crowd, like on the, and he just middle finger right to her face, and I'm like, you little sack of crap, what is your problem? Why would you do that to Queen Charmel?
I know,
man.
Show some respect.
Show some respect, dude. I mean, do this, yeah. Okay. If you're not, but come on,
don't do that.
That's rude.
It's not cool, man.
Not cool. Anyway. Yeah, the match was what it was. I mean, Cena came out. He was super over. Batista was super over. But it's funny. Like, you think, okay, the two world champs are going to team up. Number one, did Batista really need John Cena? Did he need to bring that weapon out? Not really. To face Booker T and Finley. But, you know, it was what it was. Finley barely did anything. Like, I feel in my head, like, I remember Hornswoggle came out. He kicked himself in the head on accident and then rolled out. So that really was sort of a comedy. But I feel like Finley was just there to take bumps. Who ate the pin in this?
Booker T did.
Booker T ate the pin. Okay, well, it should have been Finley. Yeah, I mean, it was what it was. It was a very underwhelming union between world champion and world champion.
It was a short match, too. It was only about 12 minutes, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this was... The tag team match was longer. The last ride match was longer. The Benoit Chavo match was longer.
Yeah, strange for the main event to be so short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's Armageddon 2006. Thanks again to Thayer at the Bada. We'll come back in another couple weeks.
How about this? I have an idea. November is Survivor Series month.
Ooh.
We each pick a Survivor Series.
Okay.
And then the Friendo universe out there can suggest a Survivor Series.
Okay.
Put those three Survivor Series up to vote.
Okay, sounds good.
Want to do Survivor Series 98, but I know we watched that with Dan once, so maybe I'll find something else.
The book of the match Dan episodes were kind of a long time ago. We can revisit it.
Okay, that's my suggestion then.
All right.
Survivor Series 98. Deadly Games.
All right.
Best pay-per-view ever.
I'll either go with the one that I tried to get this time, which is, 2012?
Survivor Series 2012?
I think so. The one with the Shield?
Oh, debut
showed
of the
up,
Shield, yeah.
The debut of the Shield. Or I'll go with, I might go with the Montreal Screwjob.
97 then.
Maybe I'll do 97. Yeah. I don't know. Anyways, we'll figure it out. In a couple weeks, we'll let you guys know exactly what your homework is.
2012 has a Ryback match against Punk and Cena.
I know.
Anyways, you have time to think.
I got time to think about it. We'll let you guys know when that comes to pass. Until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.